LinkedIn News.
Hi, I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Welcome to This Is Working, the podcast, where my colleague Nina Melendez and I discuss a conversation I had on my video series, This Is Working. Nina and I take that conversation, we dissect it, and we extract our top takeaways for you, the listener. Today, we're talking about how to find a deputy, about aligning yourself with teams who share your values, and then how to make yourself irreplaceable. We're going to get started right after this.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Here's Nina now. Hey, Nina.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
Heard you singing at the gym this morning. Right? You were at the end of your run and you were like,
Can you hear?
That's why I looked over at you. I was like, whoa, who's that?
Can you hear? Out. I thought no one could hear.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. So Jesse, who was right next to me, heard everything then?
I guess so.
Yeah. Well, do you not wear headphones, Dean? Come on.
I had headphones on.
You heard it?
Yeah. It's this new podcast. I'm like, whoa, someone is feeling it today.
God.
I don't know where there's Nina.
Hi, bendito.
I don't know. What was it? Oh, it was right at the end of your run, I think.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't remember. You were feeling it. It was great.
Well, I have to. You know, the thing is that like running can get, you got to have fun because it can get boring. I'm training for the half marathon. On mile 10, you're like this again, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. So I dance, but I didn't realize the guys could hear me.
Yeah, it turns out when you like your vocal cords, they project. And so when you.
Turns out when you breathe and you speak,
it comes out. So what are we talking about today?
We are talking about, listen, you're a bourbon man.
That's true.
I asked because Stephen Curry, who we are talking about today, has a bourbon brand called Gentleman's Cut.
Yes. And I haven't tried it yet, but I'm very interested. And it was very, I have to say, in this interview with Tiffany Williams, his COO, it was very difficult for me not to ask all of the questions about the bourbon. So I was really proud of myself afterwards.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about Tiffany.
She is the COO of 30 Inc. That is the parent company of Steph Curry's many companies. So he has a whole portfolio of companies. Tiffany got to know Steph through community outreach events when he was just starting to create this idea around SC30. He learned that Tiffany was looking for her next opportunity and he tapped her into the job. The way he's talked about her is he said, quote, she is absolutely essential. This whole thing doesn't happen without her. Mm. That's a pretty massive statement.
Yeah. And I can't imagine the kind of pressure that is on her because she has to speak on his behalf. She's in rooms for him when he can't be. And he's this massive global brand. So they get together occasionally, but for the most part, she's his deputy. And I want to highlight something she said about that. Let's take a listen.
Working with him for 7 years now with SC30 and 30 Inc., I've kind of gotten a good grasp of, you know, what he'll say on most things. When I'm unsure, I am able to just kind of pick up the phone. We do have regular touch bases, you know, if he has an off day or, you know, on a regular practice day, like probably once a month or so, we'll kind of go through along with the chairman of 30 Inc. We'll sit down and kind of hash through a lot of the laundry list of things that we have to talk to him about. And then those off sites in September where we kind of just like hunker down in a hotel ballroom with all of the business leaders and kind of hash out a lot of what we want to plan for the year, that is very valuable. And so they can hear firsthand and not just from me kind of, you know, where he is on things and get feedback on things that they're working on. I've been working in sports for almost 20 years now, so I've seen a lot and worked on the team level at the Warriors, now working with Stephen. And so I think that, you know, that experience has helped me tremendously in being able to anticipate needs and things that are going to happen. I have great relationships at the NBA office and in the Warriors office, especially having worked there for 10 years, that, you know, I'm able to lean on those people as well.
So essentially, like she was saying, they have this one massive yearly meeting where they set the strategy and then they touch base, of course, throughout the year. But he really trusts her to make calls on his behalf from there on out. And I was just curious. I mean, you have several people who are kind of like your right hand people here at the company. How did you find them or how did you decide that those were going to be those people in that role? And how do you trust them? How do you build that?
It was a very big learning for me. I've never really had somebody. For a long time, I felt like I've had to be the one in the room making all of those decisions. And if you think about my role at LinkedIn, it is an unusual role at a company, at a tech company in particular, to have an editorial leader. So for a long time, I felt like I had to be the one in the room because we were kind of making this up as we went. And there was no clear guidelines on what an editor would do or where an editor weighs in. And so a lot of it was either me kind of putting pieces together or thinking about what happened in some other meeting and bringing that to some other meeting. So the idea of having someone else be able to do that seemed really alien to me. What I discovered is that the best way to find a deputy, it's very similar when Tiffany was talking about this, it really resonated with me, is because you watch someone in action.
Hmm.
And so a lot of the people who are now representing editorial internally at LinkedIn are people who have just shown they can do that. They were doing it on their own first, or they were leading movements or leading teams or leading projects without any real guidance from me, and I would hear what they were doing. And a lot of what I do is meet with them afterwards or meet with them right before a project launches and say, well, did we think about this? Did you think about this? Did you think about that? And when you sit down with somebody and they have already thought through all of those answers, you're like, oh, this person, that's a deputy. They've dotted all the I's, they've crossed all the T's. And so you realize that they've like seen all of these patterns. They understand how things work. And so I could sort of trust them to lead efforts that when I'm not in the room. The second, one of the things I think must be tough for her is that people in the room want to hear from Steph.
Yeah.
And they're not getting Steph, they're getting Tiffany. And they have to be not only okay with Tiffany, but they have to realize she is the voice of Steph. You know, this is someone they are gonna, the answers that they get, the commitments that come out of that room, that is as good as having heard from Steph. And I think you have to do that kind of coaching for a deputy to make sure that they understand how to represent themselves in those meetings so that it is clear that they have the backing of the person they are working for.
To your first point about your own deputies, how aligned do you feel like you have to be with them? Or how much do you want them to be thinking a little bit differently from you?
I want us to be fully aligned on the goals and what success looks like. And how we pull that off, we don't have to be aligned.
Hmm.
We have to get to alignment. But I expect them to come in with their own ideas and their own sense of how to accomplish a particular project. So I want us to make sure that we know where we want to, what we want to achieve, but how we achieve it, I really expect the deputies to come up with their own ways of doing that.
Hmm.
In fact, if I'm the one doing it, we're failing.
Right. And
I imagine Steph feels the same way. Like he doesn't want to, he shouldn't have all the answers. He's a basketball player.
Right.
You know, he's expecting Tiffany to have either the answers or to partner with the people who have the answers and then bring it to him. And then he could say, great, this is exactly what we laid out in our September meeting. This is what I'm trying to achieve with my life and my persona. And you have found these interesting ways to do it. So I'm signed off.
You know, you brought up something that was really interesting in regards to Tiffany being in the room, but people really, they just want to hear from Steph. I wonder if she has come up against a little bit of resistance when she's made a call and they go, well, let's wait till Steph weighs in, or let's hear from Steph. And she has to sort of stand her ground and be like, this is the call, I'm making it. This, you know, I speak on behalf of Steph. Like, I wonder what that must be like, which I can't imagine is very easy.
I agree.
Has that happened with you? Have you had anyone come to you and be like, hey, there's kind of, folks are second guessing me.
Yes. And you have to make it super clear that, oh no, this person is my voice. Like if they made a, even if I disagree with it, I always try to back up people who are my deputies. If they have made a commitment to something, either I'll commit to it also, or I'll try to find a way, like we shouldn't have committed to that. Let's find a way to change it, but you have to be the one to go in and change it. What I don't want is what undermines someone is if I come to a meeting and was like, look, what so-and-so said in this meeting was incorrect, and in fact, we're going to do this other way. That's really bad. That person then is never trusted again as like a deputy who can make calls. So it's up to that person. If I disagree with something, I got to go back and say like, all right, you have to go in and fix this now.
Yeah.
Find a way to do it, and then I'll back you up.
It really destroys the workflow. Like I was once at a place where we had to give reviews on a certain product. And the idea was that the person ahead of me would give a review and would kind of speak on behalf of the person above that person, right? And the second in command would give direction that then later when the product went to the top person, that top person would be like, no, it should go this way. And that happened enough times that people would start saying like, well, let's just give it directly to the other person above because they're going to kind of, you know, otherwise we're going to be led astray. And it completely broke down the fabric. It undermined that person's credibility and their authority. And it was just a mess.
Totally.
Yeah.
You can't do it. There's no point in even having a deputy if that's the case.
If that's the case. Yeah.
One thing that I've seen work is if you have a situation like that where you have someone at the top who wants to make her own calls and is not going to empower the deputy, at the very least, you can be the kind of if you are the deputy, you can be the kind of person that just says, let me take a first look at that.
Yeah.
And I can tell you where to steer this meeting.
Yeah.
And that idea of being less a deputy than a chief of staff, someone who's like, look, I could tell you, I've seen her react to this sort of thing. This is probably what she's going to say, or don't put this in the presentation, or do put this in the presentation. That's a different kind of a deputy. But you have to sort of know who it is you're working for. Are you working for someone who is going to empower you to make the calls in the case of Steph Curry?
Right.
Or are you working for someone who wants to make the calls himself or herself?
Right.
And if it's the latter,
then
your job is very different.
Yes.
Your job is to set partners up for success in those meetings, essentially, or to screen out the meetings and make sure you get the right people in the room. Mm-hmm. But you have to be sort of more of a mind reader and less of a call maker.
Mm-hmm. Understand that you have an audience of one at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so how do you present whatever it is for that one audience?
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on my conversation with Tiffany Williams.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
And we're back. Tiffany has a unique job, and not just because she is working for a professional athlete, but because she's trying to build a business with a brand that has a really defined time to shine.
Yep.
I mean, Steph Curry is an athlete. He is going to be on the court for only a certain number of years.
Yeah.
So how do you maximize that time when everyone wants to be associated with his brand? She talked about how she works hard to make sure she's playing the long game here. She's partnering with brands who are going to stick around whether Steph is playing or not.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear what she had to say.
We've been the last few years, we've kind of really been concentrated on what those legacy partnerships look like. So, you know, with Chase and Rakuten, Under Armour, these are the partners that we have found that are like values and really wanting to elevate the under and provide opportunity for community. So we've kind of narrowed our scope in the number of partners that we are working with on an endorsement level, but we've also taken those same partners and integrated them through our businesses. So, you know, whereas Chase, JP Morgan Chase is also a partner in Underrated, where, you know, his relationship with NBC on the Unanimous side, they also are partners with ELP. We've taken, you know, that core group and we've integrated them throughout the business and within 30 Inc. we found with our partners, because we have those like values, the desire is there for them to be ingrained in everything we do. They really love the work that we're doing. So it's not, you know, a stretch for them to show up kind of wherever we are. And we keep them, as well as our other partners, abreast of all the things that we're doing. And it's more of the love of what we're doing in the community. And, you know, they've become our extended family of 30 Inc.
You know, as she was talking about this, I was just thinking, like, I think if I were a professional basketball player, which was not ever in the cards for me, unfortunately, I would be really transactional. I think I'd be like, I'm going to make as much money as possible.
It's so funny you say that. I was thinking the same thing. And actually, with our producer, Taisha, we were talking about this. We're like, we would just be getting it all.
Yeah, exactly.
ASAP. Yeah.
Put my name on anything. Everything.
Is
let's
that
go.
A cup?
Let's go.
Put my name on the cup.
Exactly. I'm like, yeah. I've got, I don't know, 4 years here. I'm going to make the money now.
Yeah.
And she talked about this idea of legacy brands. You know, this is, and what I loved about this is she was finding brands that weren't just going to pay the most, but brands that were going to stick around. And the way that she did that was finding, or the way that she and Steph did that was by finding brands that had the same values as Steph had.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that meant doing due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
Where else was Chase investing? Where else was Rakuten investing? And how were they putting their money where their mouths were?
Mm-hmm.
Steph and Tiffany went into these meetings, understanding that this brand lived the Steph Curry vision,
right.
In which case they were willing to entertain a pitch from them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. I think, you know, not all of us have the opportunity to align ourselves with brands, but certainly with people.
Yeah.
And with who we surround ourselves at work and even the companies we join, you know, the places we choose to work at. It's, do they align with the things that you believe in, and do you feel like they're going to be in there with you for the long haul? I think it's a little bit more difficult when you're picking where you're going to work because you don't always know. But I remember someone asking me if I would work for, you know, when I was working in TV, if I would ever go work for a certain network, an uber conservative network. And I was so broke and I was so young, but I was like, no, I don't want to align myself. I don't want to have that on my resume because I don't trust their brand. And I don't know how that's going to tarnish or impact me as I try and move up in my career.
Yeah. And we've seen in our own data that people are increasingly looking for jobs based on companies that share their values. When a company's values don't align with a job seeker's, they are increasingly choosing not to work at that company. This is mostly being driven by younger generations, with close to 90% of millennials and about 84% of Gen Z saying they have to have a cultural compatibility with the company that they are applying to. But even baby boomers are saying the same thing. 67% of them are saying they want to have this values alignment. That wasn't true, you know, 10 years ago. This is like a very big change. And I think it goes beyond just saying, I want a company that I'm proud to have their name on my swag.
Yeah.
You know, this is saying, like, when I walk into the office, I want to know that I'm trying to achieve the same thing my company's trying to achieve. But the other part of this, and I think this lines up with what Tiffany was saying, is that everything gets easier if you share values.
Yeah.
You can make decisions together. You don't have to, you start a meeting with the same mindset of,
right,
like, going back to that discussion about finding a great deputy, is we share the same ideas about what we want to accomplish. When you work for a company that shares your values, you know, walking in the door of the day, you're trying to sort of accomplish the same thing.
Right.
That means you don't have the fights in meetings. You don't have this fight over projects you want to do. You don't ever have fights over, you know, what success looks like.
Yeah.
So that kind of just makes everything a little bit more effective.
It's so much, when I talk about work sometimes, it feels like you're talking about relationships, like a romantic partner. You want to link up with someone who has those values so that you're not arguing about the stuff that, no, this is fundamental. We're not arguing about the fundamentals here. Maybe we can argue about how we get to a thing or, you know, but the values are the same. It's just, they're so one-to-one, don't you think?
Totally. Totally. And this is not a relationship show, but I would tell my kids as they get older and start looking into relationships that exactly what you're saying, make sure you share common values, because when times get tough, those values get you through everything.
Yeah. So like with work, you know, like, you're not going to always get what you want at work and it's not always going to go your way. But if you have that trust fundamentally with your managers and with the organization, and you agree generally with, like, the direction that the organization is going in, your team is trying to achieve a certain goal. It's like your own disgruntlement with a thing, for example, it's a lot easier to get over when you're kind of on board with everything else.
Totally.
You know?
You know, Tiffany said, and I wasn't surprised at all, that she gets a lot of people asking her how to do jobs like she has. I mean, who wouldn't want that job? It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What's interesting is she did not, you know, she didn't start off with this as a goal. She was working as a receptionist in the Warriors, but what she did have was an eye on bigger opportunities. So as soon as something came up in the business development department, as an example, she applied and made herself indispensable for that role. Let's take a listen.
You know, when that position came available, I was like, oh, I have to get this. So I talked to everybody who, you know, worked in that department and got some insights and tried to make them love me. And hopefully that would give me a foot in to get the role. And I did. So I, you know, I'd done a couple events for him, some in the community when he got his FIBA gold medal. And so I think maybe it may have just been, you know, watching the way that I worked through the years. And I, you know, worked closely with him and his family on some events and some things in the community. Like, you know, his what's now developed as Christmas in the, with the Currys started off at the Warriors was a Feed the Children event. He was drafted in 2009 and I started in 2006. So, you know, I'd been there and gotten a good grasp of the organization by the time he got there. And but, you know, since working with him, I think that I ask him a lot of questions in terms of, you know, the things that, you know, he wants to see and how he wants things done. And I think just my ability to act on that has, you know, provided him that trust and he knows that I won't steer him wrong.
So I got a couple of really great nuggets from this. So one was when she said that she talked to everybody who worked in the department and got insights about the department. So she did her due diligence and she, like she said, she tried to make them love her. So she was networking internally. And we've heard from many leaders like Belen Garijo recently who said, like, don't just network outside of your company, network within your company. It's like one of the best ways to get ahead. And then the other thing that I loved that she said was Steph was probably watching the way she worked from afar and made a decision to tap her to join his company just based on that. So this idea that do a good job because you never know who's watching. You're kind of always sort of applying or auditioning for the role without ever knowing it.
Totally. And you mentioned Belen Garijo, the CEO of Merck Group. It is exactly, you're right, what she said. And it goes, she was like, network all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But networking doesn't mean handing out your business cards or telling people why you're great. It means working with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And your reputation is then carried by them. What Tiffany mentioned is that Steph had definitely picked her out and said, yeah, you're great. You're like accomplishing all this stuff. But I have no doubt that he asked other people their opinion.
Oh, I'm sure.
There's no way he made this decision just in a vacuum or trusted himself. He doesn't seem like that kind of a person.
Yeah.
He, I'm sure, did his due diligence as well on Tiffany, and her reputation was then carried by all these other people who said,
mm-hmm.
yeah, she's achieving all of this great stuff. So you're right. You're always building your personal brand internally. That does carry you really far. And yeah, I mean, I love what you said about this idea of working like everyone's always watching you. I think that's exactly it.
Yeah.
And to go from being a receptionist to be a COO, that is a pretty good sign that this is a path worth paying attention to.
You know what's actually in a kind of creepy way, Dan? It's like you never know who is watching you. Have you ever had someone tell you that you did a thing once and it really made an impact on them and you can't even remember the thing that you did or the thing you said?
All the time.
Right? And you're like, wow, so like I am somehow influencing or making an impact on people and having and not even doing it on purpose.
Absolutely.
It's like people are observing.
Yeah, they are. Do you think it makes people feel worse if you say, I don't actually remember what you were talking about? Or is it better? Should you lie and say that you do remember that? Or should you just admit you don't have any memory of it?
I'm not good at lying. You could tell immediately if I was lying. It's happened to me several times. I go, oh, I had no idea, but I'm glad. You know, thanks for sharing. I like it when people share that. It encourages me. And I do that too. Like if someone does something or say something, like a year ago, I on LinkedIn actually emailed this guy who used to be the director of a job I had 10 years ago. And I just, something that lives in my head rent-free was a way that he handled an escalation. Me and the EP had a very big disagreement. And I did not intend for it to get big or anything, but people had overheard him, like he was yelling at me.
Mm-hmm.
And the director pulled us both and just said, hey, I want to hear what happened. And I was like an AP or a PA. I was very low. And I was so shocked that the director even cared about my perspective on the thing. But I just remember being like, that was a really powerful moment. And as for someone who was young in her career, that really stuck with me. And for some reason, like a year ago, I was like, let me tell this guy he did that thing. Because it really made a difference to me, you know? And I just, out of the blue, just said, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but you did this thing and it stuck with me. And I appreciate that you gave me the deference to hear
my
perspective. And he replied, he's like, of course I remember that. And I remember you and Mike, thank you for sharing. And it was, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. One of the things Tiffany's talked about in the past is that she was committed to being noticed. It wasn't like she was accidentally noticed. She was like, right. I think her quote was that no one is going to outwork her. And she wanted to make sure that she didn't leave anything, and this is sort of Steph Curry related, is you don't leave anything on the court. You know, you like everything. Is that the saying?
I don't know.
This is a blind leading the blind on basketball terms. But, you know, the idea was like she was going to do everything she could to be able to nail every single job. And that idea, I think that is a phrase that comes up a lot with the people I interview is no one is going to outwork me. Mm. And I've always wondered, like, Is that healthy? Is this something that you can even achieve? That's like too high of a bar.
I mean, if you're passionate about it, go do you.
Yeah.
You know, if she was passionate about it and she wanted to outwork because she had a goal in mind, I think that's admirable and that's a great work ethic.
I love the goal. Love the work ethic. Yeah. It's the idea of outworking someone else that always throws me off.
Have you ever been in a situation where you felt like you really wanted something and you were going to work your fingertips off to get it?
I remember when I wanted to be the editor of Fortune.com, I was committed. This is like, there was an opening. There was this small window. I wanted to go from print into digital. Mm. And this felt like a way to do that at the top. And I had to get that job. And so I was traveling on, at the time I was working for Wired, and I was trailing the Secretary of Energy for a story. Mm. And I had to fly to Copenhagen for COP. And on the flight over there, I needed to get my sleep so I could spend the day trailing and interviewing this guy. But instead, I stayed up all night writing a 6-page memo explaining why I was right for this role, exactly what I would do in this thing.
6 pages.
Yeah, it was like intense. And then I had to do a whole day. I don't think I got any sleep at all. It wasn't one of my best articles. But for me, I was like, this is not, I am going to go, I'm getting this job.
Yeah, non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable. This is my job. And so that's the one time I can really think that.
Do you regret that? No. Right? Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So, of course, Tiffany doesn't regret outworking whomever.
Exactly.
Because she's now the right-hand woman of Steph Curry.
Yeah. So what's the message there? It is like work.
I think it's like if you have a goal and if there's something that you really want and you truly want it for yourself and for your career, then do everything that you need to do to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't let anything block you. You sacrifice other things going on.
Everything worth getting is going to require a sacrifice.
Yeah.
So you can't do it for all of the things, but for the things that you really want, I think it's worth it.
Love it. All right, we want to hear from you. What resonated with you about my conversation with Tiffany Williams? Let us know on LinkedIn using the hashtag #ThisIsWorking. You might hear your contributions on an upcoming episode.
Please share this podcast episode with a friend and review it. It helps new listeners find us. If you'd like to hear the full conversation between Dan and Tiffany, check the show notes. We'll link to it there. This Is Working is a LinkedIn editorial production. Our production team includes Sarah Storm, Stephen Valdivia, Asaf Gidron, Taisha Henry, Andres Cordona, and Lolia Briggs. Joe DiGiorgi Mix is our show. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Dave Pond is head of news production. Our head of original programming is Courtney Coop. I'm Nina Melendez, senior producer.
And I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Be well and stay curious.